The Night Owl Podcast, Campfire Episode 9, Haunted Heartland. Welcome to the Night Owl Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Ballou, and this is a place for all you restless spirits out there to tune in and hear true tales of the paranormal. I hunt these stories down, capture them from the mouths of those who experience them, and share them with you, right here. If you have a story to tell, we're currently looking for more personal ghost stories, so if you or someone you know has one, please submit it to us for consideration. Go to thenightowlpodcast.com, click on the Submit Your Story page, and let us hear your ghost story. We'd love to consider it for the show. We've seen it in movies, and we've read it in books. It's the typical modern ghost story. You and your unassuming family move into a new home. A new chapter begins with a mix of uncertainty and excitement, but then the strangeness creeps in, subtly. At first, it's just a few odd noises in the night, possibly voices in the hallway, but it soon progresses, and over time, the sounds begin to move, make their way into your bedroom. Other members of your family report hearing things as well. Ultimately, the haunting grows more tangible. Maybe you're touched, or you wake to find a shadow standing at the foot of your bed one night, only to vanish when you jolt up and flip on your lamp. In tonight's campfire, we have one such story for you. The story revolves around a family of four who decided to build a new home in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, in 2012, where each family member would have their own unique experiences and collectively grow more concerned about their own safety and ultimately involve a local psychic in hopes of finding answers. Stay tuned. This episode is brought to you by Oh Boy Print Shop. When you need custom t-shirts, this shop's got your back. Crisp, clean t-shirt printing without setup fees or hidden costs, and always delivered on time. OhBoyPrintShop.com. That's OhBoy PrintShop.com. Mention the Night Owl Podcast and get $50 off your first order. The state of South Dakota has a long and storied, and sometimes spooky, past. Burial mounds containing the remains of Native Americans known as the Woodland Indians, dating back as far as 1600 years ago, are located there. There are actually five such ancestral burial grounds located in the heart of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. The Lakota and Dakota tribes interred many of their people in these ceremonial burial mounds when they hunted these plains in the 18th century. Many urban legends, myths, scary tales, and horrifying true crime stories have been born in this Midwestern state. The urban legend of Walking Sam comes to us from the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in southwestern South Dakota. Imagine, one dreary rainy day, a young girl is walking alone down an isolated path in the woods outside of her home near the Black Hills of South Dakota. Suddenly, she begins to hear strange whistling coming from the dense trees. Recently, this young girl has been experiencing deep depression, even claiming to hear voices in her head. Voices begin to come to her as whispers, telling her that she's worthless, unwanted by anyone, even her own parents. The girl actually begins contemplating suicide, a suggestion by those voices in her head. And as this late evening approaches, she suddenly spots something strange, a face peering from behind a tree. But this face has no features, aside from two burning white eyes. She can make out a figure, tall and lanky, black as night, and wearing a black top hat. The whispers in her head grow louder and louder until they seem to be shouting, "You're worthless. You're nobody. Remove yourself from this world." This tall figure finally steps out from behind the trees, spreading its long gangly arms wide to reveal the many souls of Lakota men and women victims dangling from underneath. Walking Sam is the name that sends chills down the spines of South Dakota residents. He's existed among the Lakota and Dakota Native American tribes for quite some time now. Sometimes referred to as Takuhe, or the Tall Man, he's described as a 7-foot-tall specter wearing a top hat, with no mouth, no nose, lean and long gangly arms which, when lifted, reveal the souls of his victims. Walking Sam is said to be a demon sent to Earth as punishment, and that lives in the woods near the Pine Ridge Reservation, constantly hunting for victims to keep him company. According to an article found on Wattpad.com, the Pine Ridge Reservation has experienced a staggering 103 suicide attempts as of December 2014, with 9 people between the ages of 12 and 24 actually succeeding. Local pastor John Tubols tipped off to a group suicide planned in a wooded area, raced to the area, and found and removed nooses hanging there. Teachers at the local school foiled a plan by several high school girls to commit a group suicide. Oglala Sioux Vice President Thomas Poorbear had a parent come to him with a Facebook post of nooses hanging in trees in a nearby community. Many local residents attribute these alarming incidents to Walking Sam, the evil entity who preys upon the already lost and depressed youth in the area to collect their souls. Travel to Rapid City, South Dakota, and you might meet up with Hooky Jack. His given name was John Leary, but after a mining accident in the 1800s, he lost both arms and one eye. His arms were replaced with hooks, so thereafter he went by the nickname Hooky Jack. He went on to become a night watchman in Rapid City, but died after being struck by an automobile in 1926. His spirit is said to haunt his former residence, which later housed a number of bars. Many of the employees there would refuse to go to the third floor, claiming that the presence of Hooky Jack's ghost was still walking his beat. South Dakota has its share of haunted buildings as well. The Bullock Hotel in famous Deadwood was built around 1895. The original owner, Seth Bullock, who was the first sheriff of Deadwood, supposedly haunts the hotel. The Orpheum Theater in Sioux Falls, built in 1913, has a resident ghost by the name of Larry. Staff at the theater have claimed to hear unexplained noises and footsteps after closing. Spooky Road, an eerie stretch of highway just outside of Brandon, South Dakota, is said to be especially scary at night. The road has a series of winding curves that navigate through tunnels of trees, adding to the eerie drive. Rumors say that several people have taken their lives on the bridges along this route, and you can sometimes see apparitions of a ghostly man on the side of the road. Many people claim that as you drive the route, you cross 5 bridges one way, but only 4 on the return drive. And then there's the horrendous Gitche Manitou Massacre, which took place just outside of Sioux Falls in nearby Larchwood, Iowa, just 18 miles away from Sioux Falls. On the cool, brisk evening of November 17, 1973, Roger Essam asked his girlfriend Sandra Chesky to go with him to Gitche Manitou, a nature preserve located about 18 miles east of their hometown of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Gitche Manitou was a popular destination for teens waiting to get together and party, and indeed many of these parties had taken place there over the years. Going with them were Michael Hardreth, 15, and brothers Stuart, 18, and Dana, 14. Their plans were to build a campfire, smoke a few joints, and listen to Stuart play his guitar. Upon arriving, the teens parked the van and made their way down a narrow path, eventually settling in an opening among the trees some 30 yards from the banks of the Big Sioux River. Soon, a campfire was burning, providing light and warmth from the chilly November air. Stuart strummed his guitar, marijuana smoke mingled with the smoke from the campfire, and the teens settled into a peaceful evening in the woods. Suddenly, the sound of sticks breaking was heard coming from the woods behind them. Roger stood to his feet to demand who was there, and was answered by the sound of gunshots. Roger fell to the ground dead, and Stuart fell wounded. The remaining teens fled to the safety of the trees, but were soon ordered out. Roger was left lying dead by the campfire, and the remaining teens were marched at gunpoint back to their van. Sandra was tied, placed in the van, driven to another location, and eventually raped. Michael, Dana, and the already wounded Stuart were then lined up in the roadway and executed with a shotgun. The assailants were Alan, David, and James Fryer, also from Sioux Falls. They were at the preserve that night, supposedly poaching deer, when they happened upon the victims sitting at the campfire, singing and smoking pot. The brothers decided to take the teens' marijuana by impersonating narcotics officers. They positioned themselves on a ridge overlooking the campfire and, for whatever reason, opened fire on the teens, killing Roger and wounding Stuart. After killing the other 3 boys, Sandra was taken to a farmhouse where she was raped. The next day, Alan Fryer, still pretending to be a cop, told Sandra she was too young to get busted and drove her home. Sandra was later able to lead police to the farmhouse, and the Fryer brothers were each sentenced to life in prison. Today, the Gitche Manitou Preserve is still visited by many, some just looking to take a stroll through the woods and experience nature. But there are many others that venture there at night. seeking a paranormal encounter with one of the four victims of this heinous crime. These are just a few eerie tales that emanate from the heartland state of South Dakota, but tonight's story doesn't take place on a spooky road, reservation, or nature preserve. It takes place in a newly built home in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. In 2012, Mary and Jeff wanted to build their dream home for themselves and their two children, Colin and Tessa. They were a family who had strong interest in the paranormal. Today, their son Colin is a well-known ghost hunter with 500,000 subscribers on his YouTube channel, The Paranormal Files, where he travels the world investigating famous haunted places. But this story Colin and his family are about to tell happened before his career as a paranormal investigator and YouTube star. It's the story of his childhood haunting that plagued not only him, but his entire family. In the following campfire, you'll hear from three members of the family: Colin, his mother Mary, and his father Jeff.
My name is Colin Brown. I'm 23 years old, and I've been investigating the paranormal for a long time now. I actually lived through a haunting in my own home that was completely inescapable. It was something that was happening every day. It was something that you can't just turn off. You're forced to live with it. So this whole story has more of a personal significance to me because obviously it's something that was very visceral and something that I've looked back on many times over the years thinking, why did I not record any of that? Why didn't I get any footage of what was happening, considering that my career now is being a paranormal investigator? It blows my mind. On family vacations, we always went on ghost tours, and we'd check out these kind of spooky hot spots in the places we'd travel to. So I grew up with an appreciation for the paranormal and a curiosity that would end up later in life driving me to seek out answers. Through the course of this story, as it was happening, I ended up becoming the ghost guy at my high school, the haunted kid. And I'd actually end up telling this story that I'm about to tell you at parties. People would bring me to a room at the party and lock the door and say, please, you got to tell me about what's happening at your house. And I loved it because it was real and it was happening. And I used to put on a front of acting like I wasn't afraid and I wasn't concerned about what was happening. But then after the party, I'd return to my house where the haunting was happening, and it would become real again because you would never know what was going to happen inside of my house. I grew up in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which is part of the Midwest, 4 hours from a big city, the population of around 180,000 people, and it's the largest city in all of South Dakota, which is not saying much because there's only 800,000 or so people in the entire state. And living in Austin now, where there's more people here in this one city in Texas than in my entire home state, it's kind of mind-blowing. And above all, it's a very religious area. There's a lot of churches. I grew up Lutheran, ended up kind of distancing myself from my religious identity. Nowadays, I kind of identify as more of an agnostic, just somebody that, you know, I don't have the answers, and I don't think that I ever will. And when I started telling this story to people, they looked at me like I was insane, like they didn't believe what I was saying. And night after night, I would tell people about what was going on, and I'd get a couple of core responses. Either there's no way that that's happening, someone would laugh, and then the entire group would laugh, maybe like it was a joke, or you need to go to church and get this figured out. It was a beautiful house. It was brand new. My parents had it built. My dad had purchased property, and this was the first time we had ever, you know, built a home or had anything that was our own, fresh.
My name is Jeff Browen. I'm Colin's father. Really what I remember, first of all, is kind of the size of our home we built. It ended up being dug into virgin ground above a hill above my clinic, land that really had been undisturbed for, a person who owned that before me went back to the 40s, and the one before that was in the teens. So at least I know it goes back that far, that nothing had been disturbed there. So basically, we ended up building our home on this kind of virgin hill overlooking the city of Sioux Falls.
We decided to build our dream home in 2012. We completed our home in 2013, and we were so excited to move in because it was our dream home. We had it exactly how we wanted.
And when we moved into this new house, it was kind of, for all of us, this hopeful new beginning. And obviously, no one had ever lived there before. We were the first people to leave a mark on the house. And so when we had this thing built, I don't think anybody was thinking that we're about to move into one of the most haunted houses in the entire city. It's kind of like the movie Poltergeist, you know, where it started out kind of innocuous and playful. Day one, I was at my old house, packing things up with my mom and my dad, preparing to move some more boxes over from that house to the new house.
On move-in day, we left our 11-year-old daughter in our new house, and she was unpacking boxes in her new room, and we were going back and forth between the old house and the new house.
And we get a frantic phone call from my sister, who would have been around 11 at the time, and she was actually trying to remove the screen from the window in her bedroom and climb out of the window. And my parents were freaked out. They're like, what's going on over there? What's happening? And she claimed that she had heard male voices talking in the kitchen area and that she had locked her door and was trying to crawl out of the house because she was afraid that there were people in there that she didn't know. And we rushed back over. We found her scared out of her mind.
We found her hiding in her closet, and she was so scared, and she told us that she had thought that we were in the house, and she heard clanking and glasses, like somebody was doing dishes or putting away dishes in the kitchen, and she realized that we weren't home, and so she kind of got freaked out, went back into her bedroom, and started unpacking again, and then that's when she started to hear two men's voices, and so that totally freaked her out. She tried to get out of her bedroom. She was trying to take her screen off, could not get it off, and so she was hiding in her closet when we got home.
And there's nobody there. Obviously, that is a bit of a red flag when it's one of the first times that you've ever been to your new house. It's the first time my sister was alone there, and all of a sudden she is so afraid of whatever is in the house that she's trying to escape through the window. But still, none of us thought that it could have been a haunting because it's a brand new house. None of us were going into this thinking that that was a sign that there was something there.
At the time, we were just actually so busy moving, and we kind of thought maybe she's having a little bit of anxiety moving from one house to the next. And so we actually kind of blew it off a little bit and just went on with moving.
And my sister eventually calmed down, and we finished the move-in process. And as the school year began, I would come home from school before anybody else was home, and I kind of got this feeling, almost like there would be somebody there in the house with me, but there was never anybody else home. And that was the first thing that I kind of started to notice, was that I didn't feel fully comfortable in the house. It was not this positive energy. It was something that just felt bad. There's no real way to describe it, but when you look at it objectively, you can't just instantly know that your house is haunted from a couple of bad feelings and your 11-year-old sister hearing voices in the kitchen. So none of us were thinking that there was something that we needed to be afraid of in the house. We were just living our lives. And I'd go to school, come home on certain days, kind of feel that feeling. Nothing physical was happening yet. As a few months passed and we kind of got into the October season, the activity began to become more prevalent. We would hear things. Maybe it was a footstep or two in the hallway at night, or it was my sister once again claiming that she heard these men talking out in the hallway. And we'd tell each other these things at breakfast or dinner at night and say, oh, I kind of heard this, you know, noise last night outside of my door. But it was never considered that our house could be haunted. It was more like, oh, that's weird. Well, yeah, it was weird. Okay, well, what else happened at school today? It was never actually seriously considered that it could be or grow into something that was an issue. That night we'd hear something else. Maybe I would hear something in my room and I'd go talk to her and be like, did you hear that? And she'd say yes. And I'd tell my parents again. And, you know, it was the same old routine. It wasn't serious. It's like your typical haunted house story where the kids are seeing the ghosts and they're trying to tell people, oh my God, there's this evil woman in white that's floating towards me in the night and she wants to kill me. And all the adults at school and the parents are, they don't believe. They just laugh it off until it gets bad. Then they're forced to believe.
Once we moved into the home back in, I believe it was 2013, it was a brand new home, obviously, and we were thrilled to be in it, lucky to be in it. And I remember only but a few nights being into our master bedroom. I remember the TV coming on in the living area. We had a great room and just came blaring on. It was around 3 o'clock in the morning and I got up and I turned that off and came back to bed and I told my wife, well, that was really weird, you know? And I think maybe a couple nights later, I heard the audio go on downstairs early in the morning once again. Not the TV itself, but just the audio, because we had an entertainment system throughout the house and it had like a brain, if you will, in a room. And usually it all comes on at once, but just the audio came on and I had to go down in the dark and came back in bed and my wife again says, wow, that's just really odd. I thought it was probably something electrical or so. We kind of chalked it up to that.
During the middle of the night, the TVs would go on really loud and playing odd things that we had never left on the TV. And we would go down, flip off all of the components. It would randomly happen again other nights. And then my son, he was in his bedroom right next to my daughter's, and he started to hear the voices also. And just saying that it sounded like two men's voices talking out in the hallway, very muffled, and just could not make out what they were saying. And they also thought they heard things kind of running up and down their hallway.
Shortly after that, a few days, we started to have my kids come in our bedroom at night, my daughter Tessa and my son Colin. And I remember Tessa coming in and being afraid because she heard men's voices we thought were outside. Once again, I got out of bed, and I'm a responsible gun owner, but I actually was afraid enough that, you know, I actually grabbed a shotgun. I'm a hunter, and I went outside thinking there's somebody out in her window. I walked around the house, and of course, there was no one there, so I came back in and assured her everything's fine. There's no one there.
We thought this was very strange. The kids thought the house was haunted. I kept saying, it's a brand new house. There's no way this house can be haunted. We just built it.
It's one of those things where you just don't believe your kids at first. You think they're making stuff up. And for me, it kind of culminated when we were in bed again one night and our alarms went off, our fire alarm, right outside our bedroom door. We have multiple fire alarms, but it was one right outside our bedroom door. And I had to get up and I eventually had to disconnect it, you know, or they're wired in and have a battery. I had to actually pull the whole thing because it wouldn't go off. I got back in bed, and this is about you know, maybe having like 5, 6, 7 experiences up to that point with the kids and ourselves on different things happening. And my wife and I were just like, something's going on here. Our feeling was a little bit, I'd say, fear, just because of the unknown, like creepy. What's happening here?
To me, one of the scariest nights of my life was, I believe, November, December of that same year. Things had gotten freaky, and I was sitting in bed one night, and I heard movement in the kitchen, kind of like plates clanking together, someone shifting stuff in the kitchen. And I yelled out and I said, "Mom?" And I heard a voice that said, "Yeah," like a woman's voice, clear as day. And I just asked and I said, "Did you bring me a glass of water?" And once again, I heard this "yes" voice echo through my house. And so I'm sitting here like, this is my mom. I'm just going to get some water. And she walked down. I heard these footsteps approach my bedroom door. And it got louder and louder until it reached my door. And then I noticed that nobody came around the corner. The door was empty. But as soon as these footsteps reached the entrance to my room, I heard a noise like something had fallen, and all of a sudden this shuffling as if somebody was on all fours crawling around my bed back and forth in a U-shape violently and fast, like scratching up the carpet. And I was freaked out. I literally sat up and I went, Mom, what the hell are you doing? What are you doing? And I turned my flashlight on my phone, and nobody's there. And I turned my flashlight and my phone up to my doorway, and my mom came walking out of the doorway and said, "Colin, what are you yelling about? I've been sleeping with Tessa because she was hearing stuff in the kitchen." I go, "Okay, I can't sleep in here tonight." So I ended up sleeping in a different room in the house and just refusing to enter my bedroom because what had happened there was so freaky. It was the sound of not only, you know, the human voice and the footsteps, but it was the shuffling that really frightened me. It was just so bizarre to hear this thing crawling around my room.
And he talked about hearing voices again, but my recollection, the thing that was creepiest for me was when he felt there was something crawling on the floor across his carpet, something like maybe with nails, like you'd hear maybe a cat's claws or something clawing across the carpet. We talked about it a bit and went back to bed and started another day. The ultimate thing was the next day, I believe, we're sitting in bed and I'm like, "Do you hear what I'm hearing?" And we're just like wide-eyed staring at each other like, dishes in our sink, which you got to remember, our master bedroom came right off the great room and the kitchen. So we had just a little entry, doorway entry that you came through to get to our main door. But right there was the kitchen and the sink with the dishes. And we clearly heard the dishes like clinking together like you were washing dishes. I got up, and as I walked towards the door, it stopped.
And so we kind of blew it off again because we were thinking, well, we always like the paranormal. We love Halloween. Maybe it's their imaginations. And so we kind of just kept an eye on it, but didn't worry about it too much until we started to hear the voices. And I was just remember specifically one day went into my daughter's bedroom, and in her bathroom, I could just hear two men's voices. And I thought, maybe it's workers outside. Looked outside the window. There's nobody there whatsoever. Left the room. I could hear them again. And so that's when I started thinking, okay, they are hearing something. And so started slowly creeping us out. And then my daughter would come into our room in the middle of the night and say she saw a shadow thought a person was in her room. So I would go and sleep with her in her room, and I wouldn't see anything. And so just kind of thinking once again that I'm not sure, maybe they're just imagining.
Eventually, I got back into my room. I think I spent 2 or 3 days in the guest bedroom. And a couple weeks passed, and, you know, 1 or 2 nights a week, you'd hear a little noise. But I had a lot of trouble sleeping because that experience was so vivid that when I closed my eyes in my room, I was afraid that whatever had come in that night could come back at any time. And the other extremely vivid thing that happened occurred 2 weeks after that first experience. And this was my turning point where I decided I'm done. Something has to be done about this. I was sitting in my bedroom, once again in my bed late at night, and I woke up, heard something in my room. Being freaked out, I just timidly opened my eyes and looked over at my window. I had my blinds open, and you could see the light coming through the window because there was a street light in the distance. As clear as day, there was a man standing in my window, the shadow of a man. You could make out head, shoulders, arms, hands. Very tall guy, very freaky. And once again, this is like something out of a movie, because in a horror movie, when a character is about to be killed and they don't do anything, a lot of times people will angrily say at the screen, "What are you doing? Run! Do this! Do that!" But they don't realize that in a moment like that, you don't have control over what you're doing. Your mind is literally inaccessible at that point. There's nothing you can do. And so as I saw this shadow figure, it started to walk towards me from the window, and I'm talking straight to my head in the bed, slowly drifting. And I'm sitting there like, holy crap, man, I need to do something. Oh my God. I was like having a heart attack as this thing just got closer and closer. And I was thinking in my mind, Colin, turn on the light, Colin, turn on the light, Colin, turn on the light. But I could not get my body to move. It was almost like I was paralyzed. It wasn't sleep paralysis because I could move. And at the last second, when it was about a foot and a half from actually touching me, I reached over and snapped my bedroom light on, looked over, and it was gone. And this was not some dream that I had. I literally could barely sleep that night. I had school the next day. I slept maybe 2 hours because I kept my light on, and I was so freaked out that not only had this thing crawled on my floor, it was now forming into some sort of a shadow and attempting to approach me. What did this thing want? Why was it approaching me? What would it have done if I wouldn't have turned my light on?
Although the family by this point had all been experiencing some level of strange activity in their home, it's clear to see that some were being more affected than others. Colin and his sister Tessa, being young adolescents, appeared to be experiencing more intense levels of activity, while their parents, Jeff and Mary, were only slowly beginning to accept the fact that there were strange noises and disembodied voices that they couldn't find logical explanations for. When we get back from this short break, Colin and his family will dig into the history of their land, try to make sense of what they are all individually experiencing in their home, and ultimately enlist the help of a friend and psychic medium, Donna O'Day. Stay tuned. A lot of people ask me, how can we support the Night Owl podcast? Well, there are two ways, actually. And what's cool is both ways actually benefit you when you do. Firstly, if you love the show, the best way you can support us is by becoming a Night Owl patron through Patreon. Patreon is a place where listeners and fans of the show gain access to exclusive extras by choosing a dedicated monthly pledge to donate to our show and keep it going. How Patreon works is you set up a small, repeating donation of your choosing. It can even be as little as $1 a month. It's basically a tip you're giving us for each episode. And these contributions will help cover the cost of things like web hosting, editing, software, equipment, travel, and all the little things it takes to make the show happen. Patreon is safe, secure, and easy to use. You decide how much you want to give per month, and if needed, You can easily cancel or suspend your contribution hassle-free. And in return for your support, we offer you exclusive access to deleted audio segments, follow-up interviews, video walkthroughs of locations we've investigated, my personal video diaries where I share secrets and personal thoughts about each episode, and patrons also get early access to ghost tour and event tickets, as well as a discount code for our merch. So go check out patreon.com/thenightowlpodcast, and I hope you can join our Night Owl patron community. That's patreon.com/thenightowlpodcast. Another way you can support us is by grabbing some Night Owl merchandise. We've relaunched our online store and updated it with some new items. Our store is filled with some really cool merch that true fans of the show like you can order and wear, proudly displaying to others what podcast you love and support. We have tees, tanks, hoodies, tote bags, stickers, and enamel pins, but recently we've added face masks and some awesome campfire mugs. Stay tuned because we also have a seriously badass Night Owl bandana coming out this month as well. So go check out our online store at thenightowlpodcast.com. Grab yourself some kick-ass merch and support our indie show. All of our screen printer materials, tees, tanks, totes, hoodies, etc. are created by our incredible sponsor, Oh Boy Print Shop, a local family-owned print shop that's been supporting our show since our early beginnings. I was nervous about taking the leap financially on my first run of t-shirts, so I looked around at several shops before making my decision. Oh Boy Print Shop was hands down the standout shop for me. They addressed every concern and question I had personally with expert advice. They even helped me adjust my logo to work well for printing and showed me examples of the shirts in person so I could put my hands on them and even try them on. Their awesome customer service and professionalism made me more comfortable with the decision to go for it and print my first run of shirts. I sold out within a month and have been an Oh Boy Print Shop customer ever since. If you're looking to create some brand tees or get your name out there with custom screen printed materials, if you work with Oh Boy Print Shop, mention the Night Owl Podcast and you'll get $50 off your first order. So what are you waiting for? Visit ohboyprintshop.com. That's OHBOY printshop.com.
What did this thing want? Why was it approaching me? And what would it have done if I wouldn't have turned my light on? But in a moment like that, you're too afraid to even think of something like that because it feels like danger. The unknown, a lot of times to people, myself included, can feel very, very dangerous. And that's kind of how it got to feel in my house, because the haunting in the house started to take on this ominous feeling, not just your average, oh, the lights will turn on sometimes, or you'll hear a little knock in the middle of the night. It was more along the lines of this thing wants us to know that it's here, and it seems to want to say something to us or for us to do something, and it's going to get our attention. We all collectively, as a family, became aware that we weren't alone in our house. There was something or someone else in there with us. And so my mom and I one day decided to try to get some clarity on this. And we sought out a psychic medium friend of my family's. Her name is Donna O'Day, and she's a really good friend of mine. I went for a private reading at her house, and she told me all these different things. She even gave me some details that I didn't understand that I eventually went home and told my dad about, and he correlated everything that she had told me as relating to my aunt who had passed away when I was younger. She's the only relative that I've ever known that has died. Donna had drawn out these sketches, and my dad, when I showed them to him, his face went white, and he went into his closet and brought out a notebook that I had never seen before, opened it up, and some of the drawings that Donna had drawn on this piece of paper were almost an exact match of the scribbles that my dad had drawn in this notebook almost a decade ago when his sister had died. And at the end of this reading, when I was with Donna, we hadn't told her anything about the house. We hadn't mentioned that it was haunted, that we were having these issues. I had just gotten a reading, and I was going to bring it up to her at the end to kind of just get some clarity. But before I could say anything, she told me that she felt like there were two dark male energies kind of around us. She could feel that. Obviously, that was freaky to hear for my mom and I. And we were kind of taken aback, like, wow, that actually correlates to what we're experiencing in the house.
So ultimately, the decision was made to get our psychic medium friend, Don O'Day, to come over. Now, a very strange thing happened that day. Colin and I were out running errands. We knew Donna was coming over 6-ish or so that night. And I remember looking at Colin's hand. I think we're at like a Home Depot or something like that. And he had a large cut on his index finger. I believe it was his left index finger. And I grabbed his hand and I said, Colin, you know, what happened to your finger? And it's like, that's a really deep cut. He had no idea where this cut came from. And I was almost upset with him, telling him, like, no, the thing had to bleed all over the place. It was like an open gash. And it wasn't bleeding at the time. It was just, you know, like it had been before, and that was done bleeding. The reason that's important is because when we came home to our house, we had some family members waiting for Donna. Donna brought, I believe, 3 other people with her. And as soon as Donna walked in our front door, it was just like out of a movie. Colin and I were standing in the back of this little crowd of people, my family members and so forth. And she never said hi. She walked in the door and she raised up her left index finger, kissed her finger, and she said, does somebody here have a cut on their finger right here? And it's like she drew the arc pattern from like the tip of the finger past the first joint into the medial part of the inside of the finger. And when she said that, Colin and I just looked at each other. I think we about dropped over. We're like, that's just insane that she would say that. And she said, the lady doing your dishes cut her finger in the dishes, and she's really mad about it. So the idea was that Donna picked already up a woman in the kitchen doing dishes, and she cut her finger, and it manifested on Colin's hand. I mean, that's what went through our head immediately, obviously, because we'd heard dishes, which is what really drove us in the end to bring Donna over.
How is that even possible for somebody to know that? And for my dad, Jeff, and I to be talking about how we didn't know how I got this cut. And she goes, I'm getting a message from somebody here. They said they're sorry for cutting your finger. They had cut themselves. And I guess it went too far and it manifested. And I'm like, okay, so whatever is in here can cut me, can scare me. I'm really glad that we have the psychics over now, because something here has to change. We went room to room throughout the house. We were using an ovulus that Donna had brought over. It's a device that takes different electromagnetic signals in the environment and fluctuations, puts them through an algorithm, and gives you words.
As we were talking about this woman at the sink, the ovulus probably a dozen or more times just kept saying, interrupting and saying, witch. And we'd all stop and go, oh, wow, the first time. And then the second time, witch. And it kept doing that until maybe, again, about that, you know, 9th, 10th, 12th time, Donna just said, okay, I'm going to turn you off.
A lot of times when she deals with spirits from an older era, which, you know, if these guys were pioneers, it would have been their time. That would have been a long time ago, 1800s. And she said that a lot of times these spirits get confused and think that she's doing witchcraft, and they get angry and they call her a witch. And I always thought that was interesting.
Ultimately, Donna walked us through the whole home. There'd been a lot of activity specifically towards Colin and Tessa's bedroom, which was on the opposite side of our master bedroom, through the great room. You had to get to it. And she picked up lots of energy there, men, other people, even a dog, actually. And interestingly enough, the dog she picked up, she waited for a little bit and said, it's a smaller dog. And I'm getting a word of, she thought a bit and said, Coco. And Coco was the name of my wife's sister's dog that was had passed away about a year before that, born the same year my daughter was. And we were very close to the dog. I think it lived to be 13, 14 years old. But when she said Coco, that really shocked us. But she ultimately picked up on these male voices, going into my daughter's room, Colin's room, and kind of showing them up into the ceiling is how she went through it into the light. And so her idea was helping to cross them over. That was her role. I don't know that much about all that, to be very honest. I'm a skeptic by heart on a lot of things, but everything she went over was just incredible, from the finger to Coco to the male voices and so forth.
While we were using this thing, and Donna was getting these weird energies from the different rooms, we walked to the edge of the house, and in our backyard, my parents had the dirt kind of excavated out back to make room for a small pool, and they had placed some big rocks kind of along the border of the pool. And Donna was asking, trying to see if in her mind she could get a response from these entities. What makes you angry about this family? What have they done? And we weren't even trying to use the ovulus. And all of a sudden, this is the first time it had said anything in 10, 15 minutes. It goes, rocks, angry, move, dirt, all in a sequence. And I'm like looking at my parents, and they're looking at Donna. Donna's looking at the psychics. Everybody is just shocked that that just came out of the ovulus. And that was all that it said. And Donna goes, well, I think they're a bit mad that you disturbed something around here, maybe just building the house in general, which, you know, I have no idea what we could have disturbed in building that house. If there were graves there that a contractor had covered up or not even noticed, or some sort of relic that an entity was attached to, I've wondered and asked myself this question so many times since all of this happened. But after all was said and done, we had gone through every room of the house with this group of mediums. Donna had talked to these entities, had gotten an idea of who was there. She said the two men kind of stayed in the upstairs. There was a woman downstairs who had come up from a nursing home that was very close to our house, a couple of hundred yards down the hill. Someone that had died there who had come up and liked to do the dishes and cook. It was kind of repeating those things that she had done in life. But she said, hopefully after all this is said and done, you guys are going to be able to sleep peacefully and this energy will be gone. But you have to be aware that something might happen tonight. And it did. Almost 10, 15 minutes after the psychics and Donna had left, all of our power went out and our cable. So we figured that that was it. That was the energy saying goodbye. And that night was the 21st, and my birthday is the 22nd. So I had a group of about six guys over. We're sleeping in my basement. We had stayed up, hanging out, playing video games, just doing whatever. And at about 3 a.m., I awoke to all of my friends just screaming, freaking out. And I'm like, what's happening? What the hell's going on, guys? And all of a sudden, my parents come downstairs. What was that? Who did that? Freaking out.
that night on his birthday, two really super, almost like a sonic boom, hit the house. All the windows shook. I went running down because he had his friends staying overnight with him for his birthday. They all heard it. When I was standing down there talking to them, thinking what could have possibly hit, a deer hit the windows, another big boom hit the house.
A massive bang on one of the windows downstairs. The entire side of my house that faces the pool is basically floor-to-ceiling windows on the ground floor. And it was this massive, just deep thud that had been so loud that it actually woke my parents up upstairs. All my friends were freaked out. We took a flashlight and went outside to see if a bird had hit the window. Obviously, we've had birds hit our windows in our house. A, it's nothing like that sound. And B, if they hit the window, usually they die. And since the snow was fresh, we walked outside, looked around, but there was no bird. There were no animal tracks. There was nothing. There was just this phantom thud. And for the next day, it was my birthday. The next day we went to one of my favorite restaurants for lunch in Sioux Falls. And we walk into the restaurant with my whole family. And there is Donna with the group of psychics having lunch. And I'm already just thinking, okay, this is just weird beyond weird that we're going to see them here. So we went over and talked to them. Before we can say anything, Donna goes, did you guys have a bang on your windows last night around 2 or 3 a.m.? And instantly we're like, wow, yes, we did. And all of the psychic mediums in the group said that they had all had this bang on their window. Donna told me that she thought that this was the spirit letting us know that it was leaving, that the energy was gone, but I wasn't so sure because I've watched too many horror movies to think that getting an energy or a spirit out of a house is as simple as saying a few words and bidding it farewell. And sadly, I was right. We had a few months of peace and calm. Nothing happened. We were all a lot more comfortable in the home. But as I started to do these investigations and start recording them, it seems like in opening myself up more to the paranormal, whatever was in the house opened up along with me. It wasn't like something was following me home. It was like me going out and touching this kind of darkness made it more comfortable touching me back in the house. And it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I was sitting in my bedroom home alone on the phone and I heard a baby right next to my bed. The person that I was on the phone with goes, "You with a baby right now? Like, what was that?" And I'm like, I have no freaking idea. Like, I'm home alone right now. There's no TV on. There's nothing. It's silent in the house. And I didn't really think much of it, but I was a little creeped out because of the history of the house.
I remember him calling me totally freaked out. And he had been talking on the phone to one of his friends and heard a baby cry. We have no babies in our family. And the friend that he was talking to also heard a baby cry. And so we're thinking, very strange, but my husband and I just thinking, okay, we'll watch this.
I told my mom and my sister, they, you know, once again thought, oh, it had to be some sort of a baby doll in the house that had activated, because we still had all my childhood toys and the dolls that my sister and I used to play with and stuffed animals I used to sleep with as a kid. But later that day, I had to go to drumline practice. Right when I got done and I'm driving home from my high school, my mom calls me, "Colin, you're never going to believe what just happened. Tessa and I just heard the baby crying from downstairs, like 5 seconds of it."
My daughter and I were sitting just on our island in our kitchen, total silence in the house. She's working on her Spanish. I'm helping her. And just out of the blue, down in our lower level, you could hear just a baby cry, just real short, but definite. And we all thought, okay, could this possibly be an animal? Is there anything in the house?
And I'm like, okay, so it happened twice in one day, different parts of the house entirely. There's obviously something here. And when my dad got home from work that night, we had dinner and we told him about that. And he thought that it was freaky, but he hadn't heard anything. Then the next day, when my sister and I are getting ready to go to school, my dad's leaving for work. He went out into the garage, comes running back inside, says, I just heard the baby out in the garage.
And he came in, he's like, you will never believe what I just heard, a baby cry. Three separate incidents that really validated what everybody was hearing.
And we're like, okay, so now we've got a phantom baby in the house. That was very real, and it was very loud and clear, but at the same time, it never happened again. So there was no real answer or explanation as to what that baby was, why it came through, but it happened. And that was kind of the reintroduction of my family to this haunting that would just continue for years. My mom and I took matters into our own hands, and we decided to go down to the courthouse in Sioux Falls, downtown. The history of the Native American tribes in South Dakota is everywhere. It's not in one area. It's all over the land, and that includes pioneer history as well, because back in the day when people took their covered wagons and headed out west, if somebody died in a new settlement and there was no graveyard or cemetery officially established, a lot of times people would be buried in the woods on their property, and those deaths and burials were never properly recorded. And this all ties into what happened and what we uncovered about my house. We got access with these historians in the record room to old city maps. We were just trying to find out what the history of our property was. When we went back and got these maps out, we determined with the historian the name of the family who had lived on the land in the pioneer days. And I can't remember exactly the details of what he told me, because this was 8-9 years ago now. But I believe there was a cabin there. There was an old well that was still there on the property, kind of towards the bottom of the hill, that was filled with arsenic. And that was removed and sealed up when we built the house.
The well, turns out, with my son Colin and my wife Mary doing a lot of research at the county office in the city, there used to be a homestead on that site back in, I think, in the 1800s. And a family of four, and I think it was the father and son, who had no death records.
We were able to find death and burial records of the mother and daughter in the family. The mother was buried in Sioux Falls, and the daughter had moved to somewhere else in the Midwest, Omaha area or Sioux City. And she was buried there. But the father and the son in the family, there was no record of their death or burial. And the historian said that it's possible that they had died in their house, that they had been buried somewhere on the property before a city cemetery had been established or anything like that. And after hearing from Donna that there were two male energies kind of following me and everything, and then having a historian say that there were these two men that they don't know where they ended up, that had lived on the land that our house was built on at one point and were possibly buried there, that added an extremely compelling element to this story. Because not only were we experiencing these things now, but through this experience, we had been led to the courthouse and to research, and we had discovered these people.
I kind of wonder about, you know, arsenic. To me, I have degrees in biology and chemistry. I have a doctorate in optometry, and my mind is a science mind, you know, fact-based science. We're proving things. We're finding a disease process with a tool and this and that. You know, I keep thinking, like, was there arsenic back then in those, in that family, and maybe their ranch hands and so forth, that they drank that water? Maybe it didn't have as much arsenic back then, but they watered their food with it, their, you know, their crops, and kind of that residual energy. A lot of times that I wonder if it's connected to that well, especially where it was located beneath Colin and Tessa's bedroom. And again, I have no proof of, you know, what a poison well means, or, you know, poison the well is obviously a famous term, but that doesn't really have much to do with spirits. But I kind of feel like maybe there was something associated with that well.
I had moved out. I was living in Austin, and I'd come home for the summers, my freshman and sophomore year, and I'd be back in my house. And I was 19, 20 at the time. When I would be in school, I'd get texts from my parents saying, "You'll never believe what we just heard, Colin. Something happened." Or my sister, "I heard the voices again." But all this activity that was happening after the psychics had cleansed the home was, it was just completely different than what had been happening before. At the beginning, it was these black shadows and kind of voices and little poltergeist things like plates moving. After the cleansing, there was a baby crying. There were power outages. There were nights when my sister literally refused to even go to the end of the hallway where our bedrooms were because she felt so uncomfortable there. It seemed like it was a different entity, a different energy that was in the home. But I was doing all this paranormal stuff. So when I came home for the summer, everybody in town knew me as the ghost guy. So they'd want to do these spooky things. I'd take people to cemeteries. We'd go on midnight walks at Gitche Manitou, the haunted preserve. We would bring some meters out to an abandoned house out in the country and just kind of mess around. But the big thing that we did was Ouija boarding. We would Ouija board all the time in my house just for fun. When we'd be hanging out in the basement, me and three or four friends, if it got boring, we'd just say, "You guys want a Ouija?" And break out the board and see if it had anything to say. Now, you got to understand, I'm not afraid of Ouija boards. I have 8 or 9 in my apartment. I use them all the time. I've barely ever gotten a response on them. But this one night when we had 7 or 8 people over, I can't remember who all was there, but my friend Joe was there, my best friend from home at the time. And we were doing this Ouija board because a couple of girls that we were hanging out with that night had wanted to do one with us. And we decided, sure, why not? There's nothing else to really do in Sioux Falls, so let's get the Ouija board out and see if it has anything to say. And we start doing it. 5-10 minutes pass, nothing's happening. We've all got our hands on the board. I was always very theatrical with my Ouija board sessions. I'd light candles, put on some music, give a little introduction, then almost a ceremony to open up the void, or however you want to describe what you're opening up, just to put that energy out there to say, you know what, we are opening ourselves up. So if there's something here, feel free to come interact with us, which is how I start investigations no matter what. But when you're Ouija boarding, obviously, that's a bit freaky for some people. So we were doing it 10-15 minutes, still nothing. And all of a sudden, we all feel the planchette kind of move by itself, and not a little movement like somebody's hand pushes it a little bit and then your mind starts to drag it somewhere. It was moving, and all of us would be taking our hands off the planchette, and it just kept going. And as it was giving these answers, it seemed to move even faster. The first question we asked, if anybody was here, it said, well, it didn't say anything. The second question was, do you have a name? And it wasn't saying anything. But then we started to ask kind of deeper questions. I think the first question that we asked got a response was, are you attached to this land if you're here? And it went over to yes. But as we start asking these questions, we start to determine that it was a young man. And when we asked its name, it gave us this weird word that none of us thought was English. We thought that we were all just kind of putting too much thought into where the planchette was moving and kind of creating this word of our own. But I need to look up the word because you can find it online. We Googled it, and it ended up being the Lakota Sioux word for warrior. And, I mean, that was mind-blowing to me. I'm like, okay, did anybody know this word before we started this? Nobody knew the word. And at that point, the girls that were there got really freaked out, and they wanted to quit. But my friend Joe and I can't remember who else was there, one or two other people, we all decided that we really wanted to find out more if this is actually happening. So the girls left, and we continued Ouija boarding, and our session lasted about an hour, hour and a half. And we got some answers that led us to believe that it was the spirit of a young man who had been a member of the Lakota Sioux tribe in the area who had died at some point. We were like, obviously a bit dumbfounded by what had been happening. And towards the end of the session, I asked if it was here, if this entity could blow out the candle. And none of us were expecting anything to actually happen. But as we stared at the candle, it started to shrink down smaller and smaller until it was barely above the wick, and then it just snuffed out. We ended the session just thinking, I can't believe that that just happened, because that was a whole angle that had never been brought up in this whole case of our house's haunting. And that night, I went back up to my bedroom to go to bed. I was very tired. And so I'm sitting in my bed, just reading something on my phone. And my bedroom lamp was on. And the bedroom lamp just shut off and my room went black. And I'm like, okay, that was weird timing for a bulb to burn out. And I turn my phone light on and I go over and I look at the lamp and I screw the bulb around a little bit. Didn't turn on. I'm like, is it really burned out all the way? And I look down at the ground and I still remember the feeling of how shocked I was at seeing this. But the cord that plugged into the wall that powered the lamp had actually been yanked out of the wall, and it was a solid 1.5 to 2 feet from the socket. If this plug-in were to just fall out, it would not have gone 1.5 to 2 feet. It would have just fallen to the ground. This thing had been ripped out of the wall. And I'm just sitting there in my bed thinking, I thought this was over. What the hell? I don't know if we actually had contacted something that night or if we were, you know, moving the planchette ourselves and this thing had just happened because of the house, but it did happen. And it really shocked me that this entity or energy from years ago that had supposedly gone was still there in my bedroom waiting for its moment to let me know that it was still there. The rest of the summer, it was mostly calm. We'd have some, you know, weird little noises and stuff like that, but nothing major like towards the beginning when we moved into our house. But I moved back to Austin to go back to film school at UT, and that next summer, I didn't come home, and I ended up just staying here and paying for my apartment. And there was this one night 9 months ago when my dad called me. My mom and sister had gone to visit my grandma in North Dakota, and he was home working, just home alone. And he was so freaked out, he could barely speak. He told me that something had actually run across the open living room kitchen all the way from the hallway where my sister and I slept which is a solid, I guess, 15, 20 feet. Thud footsteps had run all the way across the floor up to his bedroom door.
I was home alone. We have a wood floor, a large great room, and Colin and Tessa's bedroom, if you will, are on the far east side of the home. And I was in bed, falling asleep, and I literally heard, like, footsteps on the wood, if you will, like the barefoot, and, like, slapping, running towards my door. Like, started out slow, and then boom, 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 and then it stopped.
And he was so afraid that he grabbed a gun that he kept in the closet in case someone ever broke in, and he went through every room in the house searching for somebody.
And I literally went from top to bottom, every room, opened every door, and of course there was nobody to be found.
All of these experiences have just showed me that to really understand a haunting, you can't just spend a night in a building. You have to live there, you have to work there and experience it. Eventually, we sold the house a few months ago. My parents now live in Austin, but before they moved out, we had Donna and the same group of psychics come over one more time to assess the house. Donna told me that she felt like there was a manic person in the home, maybe a woman that had attached to me at one of the asylums that I've visited and just enjoyed my energy and came home and stayed there with us. But at the end of the day, there was still never a solid answer as to who or what was there with us. The house, it feels amazing. It's a great house, and I love it. After Donna came the last time, she did her cleansing, but at night when I would be downstairs watching a movie by myself and everybody went to bed, and I'd turn off the TV and turn off the lights, I always felt like you had to walk up the stairs a little quickly to kind of get away from whatever was down there in the dark. Because the haunting at the end of the day was scary. It was one of those cases where we had to have help come in. We couldn't handle this by ourselves. Something was frightening us to the point where we couldn't sleep. And even in the present day, just half a year ago, it was so scary that my dad had to walk through every room in the house with a loaded gun. The stuff that happened there in that house, that was 100% real. Something, some sort of paranormal activity that I just have no answers for. But it helped influence how I think about, you know, investigations and how I live my life. I just want everybody to know that it's coming from a place of authentic curiosity. It's just, it was so real that it has to be told to people. The story has to be heard, because there's so many people out there just like me who have had these types of experiences and who don't know where to turn. They are kind of at a dead end, but it all works out in the end, especially for me, because it's parlayed into now a career in the paranormal. I have a YouTube channel, almost 500,000 subscribers. It's called The Paranormal Files on YouTube. And you can actually put a face to this voice. We post 2 videos a week. And in doing the show, I've traveled the world from London to Greece, all over America, investigating these different haunted properties. And if you guys want to follow along with my adventures, we're in the middle of releasing a series right now from Ohio, where my father, Jeff, and I visited 7 of the most infamous locations in the entire state. We were at the prison where they filmed The Shawshank Redemption, Bobby Mackey's Music World, the Madison Seminary, this old abandoned theater in Cleveland called the Variety Theater, and even a train car where 26 people were basically boiled alive. It's called the Death Cards. It's a crazy piece of history. And you can watch all of the spooky videos that I've made to your heart's content. But at the end of the day, thanks again for hearing me out. And just know that if you're out there listening and you're going through something similar, you're not alone. And don't be afraid to share your story.
Colin's right. We're learning through this show that there are many out there who've had similar frightening experiences as Colin and his family. And we hope with our show and shows like Colin's, if you yourself have had a paranormal encounter, you're not afraid to reach out and share it with us. Colin's parents recently sold their home and have now moved to Austin. They often wonder if the family currently living there hears the dishes clinking in the sink or the footsteps running down the hallway. When Colin first told me this story, the movie Poltergeist kept coming to mind. Not only did that film capture the essence of what many of us would consider is a typical modern American ghost story, but what Poltergeist did beyond highlighting the modern ghost story was bring to surface a new terror. The idea that no matter where you live, whether it be an old home with history or a newly erected dwelling on an undisturbed plot of land, we're never 100% certain we're going to be safe. The land in which we build and tread upon has history and energy to it. Our old views of hauntings happening in historic houses and derelict abandoned buildings have been dissolved. We now understand that wherever we decide to stake a claim and call home, we're never truly certain that we're not going to disturb an energy laying dormant that might just wake up and decide to move in with us. Colin now investigates famous haunted places on his YouTube channel, The Paranormal Files. And recently, his father Jeff has joined him on his adventures. So be sure to check out their show and subscribe. I do hope you enjoyed this eerie little campfire, and that it also helps keep you a little more restless this summer. Because the Night Owl team and I are taking our annual summer break. We'll be off the entire month of July, and we'll hopefully be coming back to you with another new campfire in August. During this time of isolation and quarantine, I'm striving to also produce some extra content for our Patreon supporters. I'll be hosting some live Q&As, Night Owl Netflix parties, video diaries, and more. If you aren't already, please consider becoming a Night Owl patron. It's the best way to support our show during this time, and since we can't host events, our finances have taken a hit. We could really use the help in a time like this, and we greatly appreciate the support. Also, follow our Instagram and Facebook pages because that's a place to get the most timely updates as well. Please note that we had many Night Owl events in store planned before the pandemic, and so many of you pre-purchased tickets for our Spirit Social and our April and May Pioneer Farms Ghost Tours. These events have all been postponed until we can reschedule them. For those of you who purchased tickets, we have emailed you info on either holding your tickets or how you can request refunds. You will also be receiving updates, keeping you informed as to when future dates are determined for these events. To kick off our break, the Night Owl team and I are going camping to maintain safe social distance during these times, but still be able to see one another. I'm looking forward to this much-needed break, and also look forward to picking things back up when we're all rested. Thank you for your continued support, stay healthy out there, and we'll be back in August. I'd like to thank my investigative team, Sarah, Alexis, Franklin, and Tao, for going on these crazy adventures with me. Nicholas Fair for his talented musical contributions to this show. Jennifer for managing our merch, Patreon, and many other irrational tasks I throw her way. My dad Sam for his incredible historical research. Bo for helping produce this busy indie show. My assistant editing team, which include Alex, Alexis, Bo, Jennifer, and Mikey. And thanks to Sean for his help with our story submissions, Alicia for her creative design work and marketing, and lastly, Sandra for keeping us all on schedule and on budget. And a very special shout out to my wife, Tao, for sticking with me all these late nights and long hours, and for taking amazing photographs on every case. And last but not least, David Dalton of Driftwork Sound for mastering every single episode on the tight turnarounds I give him. Please support their works by visiting our website, thenightowlpodcast.com, and clicking on the About tab. There you can find links to all their individual works and websites. And a special thanks to this episode's sponsor, Oh Boy Print Shop. If you have the need for custom t-shirt printing, you can feel at ease in the hands of Oh Boy Print Shop. Be sure to mention the Night Owl Podcast to get $50 off your first order. Thank you all, and stay restless out there. This podcast was mastered by David Dalton of Driftwork Sound. If you're ready to up the production quality of your podcasts or music, go to driftworksound.com. That's driftworksound.com. And get your project mixed, mastered, or produced using well-established methods and unconventional techniques. That's driftworksound.com. And remember, your first master is completely free.